Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 84 for May 4th, 2010. Podcasting for Dummies. It looks like all systems are go. I should say that. All right, all systems are go. It's time for We Have Communicators.
I'm sorry. I'm not helping, am I?
No, you are helping.
I cannot get a handle on any of the new intros.
The pseudo catchphrases that I'm making up.
You're just
up
entertaining
3 seconds.
Me, and that's okay.
I think if you said, "and then I killed puppies," he would laugh too.
I did. Oh my God. Yeah, I need help.
All right, I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and the iPad. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. As always, it's a blast to be here, and I'm always excited to hear what the show name's going to be each week.
It's still We Have Communicators. That's what it's going to be, but the catchphrase has some wiggle room.
So it does, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Things have been crazy, but that's how they always are.
Yeah. Okay, so dumping, whatever you want to do. Jumping right into it. The iPad 3G was launched, released on Friday. And you have one.
Yeah, the FedEx guy came and brought one. And you know what? It looks exactly like my other one. Almost.
Almost.
Almost. Actually, I actually kind of like the other one better because the little black area for the 3G thing, I'm bummed that it wraps around to the front.
Really?
I didn't notice that in the original pictures. I had to go back and look and verified, oh yeah, that was always like that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of got this black strip that breaks up the metal, the aluminum edge of the frame.
I kind of like it. But the one thing I was concerned about with that black...
Not symmetrical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's in the center of it.
But I mean, it's not
symmetrical.
Is that what I want to say? Is that right? No, not
It's not symmetrical. Yeah, there's not another black one, another black line
on
at the bottom.
On the other side, yeah. They need to... Maybe I'll just get... Oh, you know what? I got a Sharpie. Hold on.
That's what I was going to recommend.
Masking
just
tape first. Make sure you got the masking tape so you don't go past there. But,
you know, maybe Adam is just has a really stable hand and doesn't need masking tape. That's kind of condescending of you to assume that he needs masking tape.
That he doesn't have a steady hand?
Yes.
I'm terribly sorry.
I don't. I'm the shakiest, jitteriest person you know.
Oh, then you better get the masking tape.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the one thing that I was concerned about that black strip was that on my MacBook, that black chunk isn't too securely on there, at least on my previous MacBook. I'm touching the new one now and it seems more secure. But I was concerned because you're holding the iPad always by whatever edge, that you will at some point be holding it by that edge, and how sturdy that edge was.
Where is that on your MacBook?
It's on the hinge.
The hinge, yeah.
Oh, the hinge. Yeah, I've kind of noticed that where it kind of
it's a little wobbly
in a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like bouncy.
It's a little better on this most recent one, but not much better actually. Now that I'm playing with. But anyway, how is the 3G-ness of your iPad 3G?
In terms of like coverage or
how is it in whatever you want to talk about, how is it?
I you know what? I will tell you the one thing that I guess I completely deluded myself with. And if anybody is thinking that they're going to use this for any kind of work and only get the 250 megabyte plan, forget it. I turned it on and in like 5 minutes it had 12 megabytes used up. I mean, it was like, really? And then I turned it on to try out, well, I know we're going to get to the ABC thing, but to try out the ABC 3G.
Yeah. So,
and in 5 minutes, it was, you know, pretty much 50 megabytes already downloaded.
Yeah. So did you eventually upgrade to the unlimited plan then?
No, but the one thing I did realize very quickly that I needed to do, because I had turned it on and I had Wi-Fi and I didn't even realize I was using 3G because right. I hadn't been anywhere where I would have thought I would have used 3G. But I looked at my usage and I was at 12 and a half megabytes. And I'm like, why is it 12 and a half megabytes? I thought I was Wi-Fi. And I realized that that little switch is going to become very important. The one in the cellular data part that says 3 cellular data on or off.
Okay, so you can turn
leave
it off.
Off if you're not planning on using data.
Good idea.
So even if you have a Wi-Fi connection, you may still be sucking down 3G data at the same time?
I don't know if that's what happened or if I just, you know, if it lost signal to the Wi-Fi for a second and it dumped over to 3G and then an email push came in or a push notification came in. That's my only theory is that somehow it lost Wi-Fi signal for a second, flipped over to 3G and grabbed some data.
I'm guessing right? that it works the same way the iPhone does where it'll right. it'll just sit on 3G until you turn on the screen and then it'll go, oh, Wi-Fi time? Okay.
Oh, has that happened too on the iPhone? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that's what happens on the iPhone. The Wi-Fi turns off. Once your screen turns off, Wi-Fi turns off in about 10 seconds or so.
Yeah, and so once I flip the switch to off, I've been having it off, and I don't, obviously my 3G data doesn't go up at all no matter what I'm doing. So I'm making sure that I turn it off when I'm really not wanting to use it. And anybody who's getting the cheaper plan, you know, if you get the unlimited plan, big deal. It doesn't matter because apparently some guy's testing it and he's downloaded like 100 gigabytes already, or his goal is to download 100 gigabytes.
He just bought an iPad, set it up to start torrenting something, and then just let it go.
Yeah, he's just been streaming the heck out of it. And I think the report, I can't remember, I wish I could credit the people who wrote the report, but whoever wrote the report said he was at like, he was well over the 5 gigabyte cap that is the supposed cap they have on a lot of their data devices.
Right.
And he was going to see if in the month he could get up to 100.
Well, he's calling a lot of attention to himself. So if they haven't noticed now, you know.
Well, the question is AT&T, when they say unlimited, do they really mean unlimited? And
right, yeah.
The theory is if he can get to 100 gigabytes, then yeah, they're probably no holds barred on it.
So are we sure that there is, what's the limit? 5 gigs usually on these unlimited devices?
You know, that just sounds so...
But I know a lot of people who use more than that on their iPhones. And I have to imagine if I used that much data on my iPad that quickly, that I'm using that much more on my iPhone. But every time I check my iPhone usage, this is what really baffles me too. And maybe someone can explain to it. But when I look at my iPhone data usage, I don't seem... It never seems that high to me. But on the iPad, I guess I'm doing a lot more video stuff. So maybe that's the difference. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
That would make sense because you're not streaming ABC and Netflix.
I wasn't doing that when I had my 3G on either until I actually tested. You know, I did it on purpose and then I put it on 3G just to see the video quality and I knew it was going to suck a lot of data. So
is there a 5 gigabyte limit on the iPad in the unlimited plan, or have we figured that out yet? Is that what that test is trying to determine?
That's what he's trying to determine. Like I said, he was able on the 3G unlimited on the iPad he was already at 50, 60 gigabytes. So he was already well over any 5 gigabyte cap and he hadn't received an email or any notification from AT&T and he was still going.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, there was an issue with the ABC player. I was going to say iPlayer for some reason. The ABC player on the iPad. Was not working over 3G initially. And I guess later that day, there was an update pushed that fixed that. Now, Adam, is it that videos over 3G are of less quality than over Wi-Fi?
Well, so that's what I was testing. So what I had been reading in a bunch of places was that even in the case, if you look at YouTube, and you can see this on your iPhone, it's been that way on the iPhone. If you use the YouTube app over Wi-Fi on the iPhone, and then you use the YouTube app... over 3G, you get a much lower quality of video. And the same is holding true, I guess, for the version on the iPad. Now, supposedly AT&T was asked to comment and they said that that's not a requirement for them. They're not, you know, they're not encouraging Apple or telling anybody they need to throttle down the video over 3G. Now, whether or not Apple's just doing it on their own, which they have done with their codecs in the past, you know, the QuickTime is... generally been designed QuickTime streaming the way Apple implements it to check the speed of the connection and then adjust the video quality for the speed of the connection so that you get smoother playback. So Apple often opts for smoother playback, less buffering over higher video quality.
Yeah, better user experience.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if that's just how they coded the YouTube app. But apparently, you don't have to code it that way, and you can code your video player to work over 3G. AT&T's not limiting it, so it sounds like it's just a developer thing, and it's up to the developer to implement how they want to stream the video. So I tried the ABC app over 3G, and it looks as good as the Wi-Fi version, or very darn close to it, at least the video I watched. And I only did about 5 minutes, like I said, but I watched 5 minutes of the latest episode of V, and it looked great, both in the scaled-down portrait mode and in the horizontal, full-screen mode.
Sidebar, V is awesome. So if you haven't checked out the TV show V on ABC, it's go look at it. I think,
and you can get it free on the app, at least right now.
Most of the episodes,
I hope they're going to continue to not do the Hulu thing where you only get like the last week's episode and you only have like 2 weeks to watch it, and then it like explodes off to oblivion or whatever.
Yeah, that's what they're doing right now, right? The 1 through 4 episodes are gone.
The V,
yeah.
Oh, well, okay. So in my mind, that's the latest. It's the second half of whatever season they're in, right? Because they kind of did that split season thing.
Right, yeah.
So every episode of the latest season, I guess, is still on there. And it's been a couple weeks. So cool. I don't know. Yeah, they don't have the first half of the season. I guess you're right. But they didn't have the app back then either. So I don't know if that's just because of that or that's on purpose or what.
Yeah.
Start watching V is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. You're not watching it?
No, I watched it when it was originally on.
Me too.
And
Robert Englund.
Yeah. So those were awesome in their day. And I guess I just haven't made an effort to watch the new V. So I now have my homework. I'll go watch some episodes of V.
Boom.
That was it. And it's just because I had to test something and I didn't want to have to say I tested Desperate Housewives or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. And in addition to the ABC Player application for the iPad, getting the 3G streaming for all those on just the Wi-Fi model, you also have some updates available. The entire interface rotates to landscape now, which is good. And the lock orientation switch now actually works in the ABC application. And there were a couple other things. It just works a lot better than version 1, which was on the suck version of the, on the suck side of the scale of good to suck.
I still say not as suck as Netflix.
Netflix totally sucks. Completely sucks. Sometimes that little search thing will pop down as you're typing. Sometimes, have you noticed that it pops down kind of below the keyboard in some cases?
You know, I'm pretty sure that whole it's just the web interface with an application shell on it.
Yeah, and it's
loaded
really
up in WebKit. It's just like a giant WebKit window to the website until you hit play, and then it passes it off somehow to whatever player is built into the the iPad. But yeah, they need to build a custom iPad UI like ABC did. So at least ABC did that before they launched their app. I'm grateful for both of them. Thank God Netflix is there at all, because it's become a killer app for me. I'm watching tons of Netflix.
I think that they did a good job in what they did with just kind of rolling it out with the bare minimum. Yeah, it sucks, but at least we have it.
I'm hoping it gets better. I'm hoping they just haven't went, okay, there it is. Everybody stop complaining.
I think we know enough people that we could, if we don't have enough clout to tell Netflix to get their stuff together, we could tell somebody to tell Netflix, right? Do you know who I am? Adam Christensen.
You know, that's true. We do have Adam on our side, so something will get done.
Yeah. Apple has sold 1 million iPads in 28 days.
That is incredible.
Yeah. The iPhone, I think it took like 74?
Yes.
74 days to get to that number. There have been 12 million apps. They didn't specify if they were iPad or iPhone. I'm guessing just applications to iPads have been downloaded, and 1.5 million eBooks have been sold in the iBook store. Interesting, because I can't seem to find any good books on that thing.
Really?
Yeah. Every single book, it's except for like, you know, Getting Things Done, is not on there. Every app, every book that I've looked for, I guess I just look for sucky books or something.
That is possible.
I decided to check out the Percy Jackson book. You know that one? It's kind of you know, in the vein of like Harry Potter kind of stuff. But because they did that movie, I was just curious. It's
like Lightning Kids or something.
The Lightning Thief, it's called.
Percy Jackson. I knew there's lightning.
Percy Jackson and the New Olympians or something like that, and Lightning Chief Thief. The basic concept is that there's a bunch of you know, Greek god kids roaming around on planet Earth, and they're discovering that they have like superpowers or deity powers, as it were. I haven't gotten that far into it, but it's a pretty good quick read. I like sometimes just light reads that take me back to, you know, Dragonlance when I was a kid and those types of books.
So have you tried cutting down a T-Mobile card and putting it in your 3G iPad?
No, but I want to. Doesn't that look like fun?
Well, unless you screw it up, I guess. Unless you cut too far or something. So the iPad 3G has a...
Well, can you get the like pay-as-you-go? Does T-Mobile have the pay-as-you-go cards? Will those work?
I guess. I would assume so, yeah.
$20, it's worth the risk.
Yeah, the 3G iPad is factory unlocked, so you can use whatever. You don't have to jailbreak or anything. You just have to make sure, because it has a micro SIM, you just have to cut the standard SIM card, whatever it is, down to that size. And for the most part, it looks like those SIM cards can be simply cut down. And it's the same
And you even cut through two of the contacts, which is even makes it scarier. Huh?
Oh, that is scary.
I didn't realize you cut through contacts also.
Oh, boy. Well,
yeah, like the two contacts on one side you just aren't even used.
Wow. Yeah, so you can put any SIM card that you can jam into your iPad will work.
Oh, you know, this just made me think of this because I'm thinking about, you know, internationally and getting international SIMs if it's really unlocked. That's going to be critical for anybody who uses their iPad internationally because, dude, the international data rate plans on this thing, ridiculous.
Now, aren't those just the same international data rates that you have on the iPhone?
Yeah, still ridiculous though. When I discovered, you know, opening up the web browser for half an hour uses, you know, 20 megabytes of data, and you know, 20 megabytes of data is like what, $30 or something like that?
Oh no, it's more than that.
yeah,
that's what I'm getting at. Oh, and other real annoying thing, just because I wanted to look at it right now. Why do I have to plug in my AT&T password every time?
Every time what?
Every time you need to go in and look at your cellular data plan.
Seriously?
Or information, you got to plug in your username and password. Not only that, you can't use the same account that you used with your
iPhone.
With your iPhone. Yeah. You got to get a whole new AT&T account.
Yeah, we're not really sure if that is that an AT&T account or is that an Apple account or is
it? Well, you know what else
obvious?
Is really cool that I noticed? Your iPad gets a phone number.
Yeah, yeah, it would. Well, if you got a data card.
But if you call it just says this isn't activated or this isn't an activated device or something like that. I forget what get a nice little AT&T lady, you know.
Yeah, that's
computer lady.
That's
message.
Standard procedure for any simple data device that doesn't have phone capabilities, that it gets a phone number because, you know, whatever reason. But
well, so then you would think if there was, well, I think they, I saw this too. You would think that if there was a texting app, then you could probably actually text it to it, right?
You can. And Muscle Nerd, one of the dev team guys, was able to send text messages from his iPad to his iPhone using a primitive method. He had to use some kind of shell program, you know, terminal program to actually send the text messages because even though his iPad was jailbroken, the SMS app does not work on the iPad right now for whatever reason.
Could he receive SMS through that
I did. I don't think he tried. I'm guessing no right now.
Yeah.
And that might be an AT&T thing.
If it has a number, you think the SMS system should be able to, but maybe it falls under the same thing as voice. Where
it's interesting because, well, first of all, the iPad SIM, the one that comes with the iPad, will not allow texting or voice. You have to use a non-iPad SIM. So it can be from AT&T. You can, if you're brave and you cut down your iPhone's SIM card and put it in there, you can ostensibly use it to send and receive text messages on your iPad.
Now, just so everyone understands, that is a one-way path.
Yeah, you can't put it back in your phone then, right?
Well, not without duct tape.
Now you got me thinking because I have an extra AT&T iPhone SIM from my old
phone.
So if I went in and had them activate that, and then I could use that.
Well, the thing is, you have to jailbreak your iPad, which is another thing that just recently came. I think it came out the day or the day after the 3G iPad came out, is the Spirit jailbreak. So the iPad, and I think the Spirit jailbreak covers every iPhone OS device. Is that right, Jeff?
Yeah, it said both 3.1.1 and 3.2.
Yeah, so you can jailbreak your iPad. And
well, actually, does it cover 3.1.1? I thought it was like 3.1.2, 3.1.3.
Oh, 3.1.2.
And 3.2.
Sorry, 3.1.2.
Does it cover the beta too? Or is that a different tool?
I think that's a different one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jeff. I think it was 3.1.2. Which is that not the... I don't know. I never know what the current operating system is.
3.1.3 is current on the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Gotcha.
And then 3.2 for the iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it covers the very latest iPhone operating systems that are not development, right? Or did it cover 4 as well?
I don't think that...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 4 is not included.
But there is a jailbreak out for 4. But Okay. Remember how I said that I got rid of my iPad? Well, I bought another one because I couldn't handle myself. But I got a smaller one. I got the 32 instead of the 64, so I saved $100. But I jailbroke my iPad. I did it because I love the listeners. I bought the iPad for the listeners so I could do research, firsthand research, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Totally business. I'm not using it for really cool... futuristic fun.
Remind me to tell you my smaller iPad story. I don't want to interrupt.
Okay. Yeah. So I jailbroke my iPad. Most of the stuff on there is either does not work at all. Some of the stuff in Cydia has the potential to totally bork your iPad and need you to restore it. Cydia itself is super beta-ish. And, you can't rotate it. It freaks out and you have to restart it. And with some applications and extensions that you download from Cydia, it actually causes your iPad to become so confused that when you reboot it, it thinks it's an iPhone. And that slide to unlock thing, you know, how it's much smaller. Actually, I'd say it's about the same size as it would be on the iPhone. But it becomes the entire width of the screen. So you have to slide it all the way across. And then the dock looks like the iPhone dock and the screen is smaller and it's really strange, but you just restart the springboard.
You get all the wonders of jailbreaking.
Yeah, but it's on your iPad and it's really
a bigger screen.
Yeah, but once you respring your springboard, then it works perfectly, and you can do Backgrounder works, Pro Switcher works. Pro Switcher has not been coded for the iPad though, so when you activate Pro Switcher, it kind of goes up into a little corner of the iPad. But you can switch between apps.
How about the one I wanted to ask you about? And maybe somebody has another workaround. I don't know if there's like a VPN iDisplay kind of workaround for this, but tomorrow night I'm supposed to do some iPad stuff at the user group meeting.
You want to get the iPad screen up on your...
Yeah, can you do that with the jailbreak that's out there right now? Do you know?
I've never done this, but I believe what you're after is VNCY, V-E-E-N-C-Y. Something like that. And I'll look for the link and I'll send it to you and I'll put it in the show notes.
Is this a non-jailbreak?
This is a jailbreak thing. You do have to jailbreak, but it's really easy. It's just an iPad. Who cares if, you know, if it crashes?
And it's not like anything could possibly go wrong.
It'll totally crash at some point, I'm sure. But you'll be able to do this. And they...
Well, I thought with jailbreak, you could get to the video out. And I thought there were some iPhone apps that would just straight video out the video.
I haven't done this before, but I believe what the dev team guys, and specifically Muscle Nerd, has been doing to show this stuff on a screen... Mm-hmm. Has been with VNC.
Okay, so that's a VNC server for the iPhone or iPhone and the iPad. That makes total
Correct.
Sense because that's really easy. Then I just bring up a VNC client, and I was kind of hoping that there was a non-jailbreak VNC server app.
Yeah, but you'd only
but
get
I guess
that
since
app.
It can't run in the background, you can't do that. So yep. maybe when 4.0 comes around, we'll get that.
But there are some developers working point. On a on applications that allow you to use your iPad as another display.
Well, yeah, and that's VNC the opposite direction. So, like something like iDisplay, I'll tell you why iDisplay, which lets you use your iPad as a second display,
is that the one that sucks?
Well, yeah, okay, and I'll tell you why it sucks. It sucks because VNC the client, which is what the app is running on the iPad, is just really slow.
Right. Yeah, and then it also slows down your Mac too.
Oh, that I don't know about, but I can tell you because I talked a while back to the developer on the Mac. There's a great piece of software called Screen Recycler, which allows you to take any old Mac, PC, Linux, box, basically any computer that can run VNC server on it and turn that into a second display.
Oh,
and
cool.
The developer's biggest challenge was that none of the VNC clients were fast enough at doing it that... You know, you put stuff on the second display and it'd be really slow, especially you cannot do video even with the version he has. And he ended up finding and working with a developer who makes a VNC client called Jolly VNC to optimize it so that it was just acceptable for using. So it doesn't surprise me that on the iPad, a VNC client, you know, developed like iDisplay is not performing that well because there's just, I mean, you still, even compared to some computers from, you know, 5 years ago, the iPad's not a screaming fast processor, right?
Yeah, I would just, you know, my comment on iDisplay is, yeah, it's $5, but man, I don't think it's worth it for any usage unless you are planning to just display like
your
list of tasks or
there.
Something.
I mean, you want to have your email sitting up there so you
the
can
mouse,
glance over at it.
When I used it, it was even so slow that the mouse cursor was just like... incredibly slow and not usable. But outside of iDisplay,
I'll check that one off my list.
Yeah. Avatron emailed me earlier today asking if I'd be interested in a beta version of their implementation of that. I haven't gotten it yet, so I can't offer any comments on it, but that's it seems like it's a popular
idea.
Which one? Avatron? It's not out yet.
It's in beta right now.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten the beta version yet, so.
Cool. And I want to clarify, I mean, VNC on, you know, from the iPad back to your Mac or your PC, there's an app I know that Victor Cahiel likes called iTeleport that's supposed to be pretty good as just a VNC client.
Yep, so for those who had iTeleport, also known as Jadoo VNC, on your iPhone, if you had that, they have released... a universal version of that. So if you looked initially when you got your iPad and you saw that you had to buy a new version for your iPad, it was just a matter of waiting for the universal version. So you can just download that now if you already have it. But that's what I use. I use the iTeleport, and it's really cool.
And a side note from that, and yes, they're a sponsor of mine, and I know they sponsor this podcast too. But I tried the GoToMeeting software on the iPad because I have a GoToMeeting account.
Yeah.
And I just fired it up on my Mac and it worked great.
Awesome. Really?
And you can do the VoIP, you know, VoIP conferencing over it.
Ooh, even cooler.
Yeah.
Okay. So where are we?
We're totally off
I know.
The
I know.
It's not like I would notice. I just opened the sent out.
Cool.
Oh,
iPad
hey, we're talking about cool iPad stuff.
Yeah, cool iPad stuff. Skoshi, is it Skosh or Skoshi?
Skosh.
Skosh. They announced a car kit that I'm guessing will never ship. just like all their other products. I'm just a little bitter because they haven't sent me their thing. I'm okay. I take that back.
Did you date a girl at Scosh?
No, they haven't sent me their frickin' keyring thing yet. I ordered two of them and they haven't sent them to me. I ordered them back in February. I'm just irritated. I want my
thing. What's the keyring thing?
The thing with the with a dock connector on one end and a USB on the other end, and it's retractable and it hangs off your keyring. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know that product, but I want to look at it now.
I haven't heard of that.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's jump back and talk about that. It was at Macworld, and I think it's like $30. They say that it's supposed to be shipping.
Except to you.
Temporarily out of stock still. So it's $20. I think I ordered it for $30 back when I pre-ordered it for whatever, but I digress. It's a little retractable thing, but it goes on your keychain, which is the best part. They also have a...
Oh, yeah, I saw this. The flip and sync thing.
Yes. They have
okay.
They have the flip sync and the... yeah, they're both called flip sync, I guess. The one is for your iPod or iPod accessory with the dock connector, I mean. And they also have a one with mini USB at the other end. But yeah, I haven't gotten mine. Anyway... they just announced this new product called the Scosh iKit. And what you do is you take out the, if you have a double high radio in your car, or if you have like the radio and then like a little compartment for storing documents or whatever, you have to take both of those out. You install this iKit thing. It has a little nub at the end and two plugs, a USB for power and an eighth inch mini for your audio. And then it kind of goes into this little adapter that's just the dock connector. You plug it in your iPad, and the iPad sits in this little carrier that hooks onto that nub, so you can flip it around 360 degrees and tilt it in different directions, and you can have a huge futuristic multi-touch display in your car with this thing.
That'll be promptly banned in 48 states.
Yeah. Operating iPad while driving.
Okay. It looks very cool. But yeah,
Adam, that's awesome.
Right. I'm betting that most states will completely freak out. I'm sure that it's already covered by California's laws.
Yeah, preemptively. Yeah. Anything ridiculous in your car.
Giant screen facing the... that's only allowed for CHP. The funny thing is they'll probably sell a ton to police.
Oh yeah. Stations. Yeah. Yeah. There was that. And there was also a guy who put, his iPad, he mounted it into his, kitchen cabinet and, set it up. So he has speakers in his kitchen. So he just plugged in the iPad that's mounted in there. And so now he can pull up, you know, BBC and watch that or tunes, on the iPod and,
he has to stand at his cabinet to look at all this stuff instead of sitting at his table.
Well, we're not, you know, making fun of his creative.
No. I was just asking. Okay. I was making fun of him.
You know, it's funny. I saw it and I think it can be taken to the next level. I mean, he kind of did a quick hack of it and it's kind of mounted in there, but I would imagine you could build sort of a little docking thing and have a little door that swings open and you just slide it in there when you're in the kitchen.
Yeah, that would be key for me.
Recipes and things like that, and then just pop it back out when you're ready to go elsewhere.
Yeah, he did it.
And I think we're going to see a lot of devices like that where I think we're going to see accessory manufacturers making these kinds of sort of docking stations that are customized for certain applications in certain areas.
You know, I've already seen one that looks really cool. I just forgot the name of the company. Anyhow, it's one of the there's a company that does a home automation system where it all runs off of a Mac Mini, and they have an application out for the iPhone and iPod Touch, and they just came out with their iPad version also. Savant, that's the name of the company.
Yep.
Anyhow, they developed this just awesome in-wall mounting system for an iPad, so you can control everything about your home right in the wall, and it has just this beautiful look to it, and And it's just awesome. So yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more companies that start to come out with these really cool setups for integrating your iPad into the wall or the cabinet or whatever.
The fridge.
The fridge. And people are going to eat the stuff up. And that's okay because it's cool.
Yeah, and especially if Apple ever opens the freaking darn dock connector API and lets hardware manufacturers actually make hardware accessories that communicate through that thing.
Oh, wait. They supposedly did, right?
Well, no. I thought that was a setup
and I was trying to go for it, but...
No. I mean, they did. I mean, they opened up the software and there was the big announcement and they showed like the cool... You know, blood glucose monitor and all that kind of cool stuff. And how many things have we actually seen that are where you have software on the iPad interacting with hardware? I don't think I can name one. I know there's a few, but I can't name one.
Well, how many blood glucose monitors do you have, Adam?
Well, I'm not talking about just blood glucose monitors. I'm talking about there's a bazillion applications that you can come up with this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's interesting that we haven't seen a whole lot of stuff. I think we all expected a lot.
Yeah, I started asking about that, and the response I got back from some developers was that it's not a problem that the software hooks aren't there or that you can't call the APIs through the dock connector to talk to things. The problem is apparently that Apple has some control or is limiting who has access to the hardware protocols for that stuff.
So the actual dock connector itself.
Well, I don't even know if it's using the dock connector in conjunction so that the mail side of that dock connector in conjunction with whatever that's hooked into. So the guys who make the blood glucose monitor aren't getting permission to make the blood glucose monitor that interacts with the software. They could write the software, but they can't build the hardware.
That's
what I heard. It's total circumstantial, but I asked the question, about 6 months ago, and that was pretty much the response I got.
Right.
That kind of sucks.
Speaking of things that kind of suck, Engadget asked AT&T, where's the tethering? And AT&T said, what? Right? That's what they said. And... iPhone tethering has the potential to exponentially increase traffic, and we need to ensure that we're able to deliver excellent performance for the feature. Over and above, the increases in data traffic we're already seeing before we will offer the feature.
You mean more or less than the guy that's trying to download 100 gigabytes of data on his iPad, 3G iPad?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of those guys now.
All right, so do you really think that AT&T is holding back tethering for the iPhone because of network or bandwidth concerns? Or do you think they're doing this because they can charge for multiple data accounts if they don't allow tethering?
You're saying that they're holding off as long as they can so they can sell more of those cards that they sell?
I don't know if they are or not. I'm just kind of tossing that out there.
Okay.
But yeah. I mean, you have to wonder, how long ago was it that we were promised we would have tethering and then go back even farther to when phones were first able to start doing tethering and it wasn't a problem?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, my phone tethers.
The odd thing about that, and I always kind of maintained that AT&T was going to control that through pricing of tethering plans being an add-on to iPhones, but when that that statement came out, that makes it sound to me like they're thinking of just when they're ready, and this is the one positive spin I can put on it, and I'm hoping that they're saying the way they're putting that, they're worried about all this extra data. The only way that would happen, I think, because I think a lot of users would never even use the feature. But I got the impression that maybe they were just going to let you tether as part of your existing data plan. And if they did that, they would have a huge problem on their hands.
Right. Yeah.
I can't imagine them being okay with saying, hey, you've already got a planned tether. They'll charge extra for it. They're a mobile phone company. That's what they do.
Yeah, I feel like they would charge at least $10.
But there's competitors that aren't, right? now? I think so. I think somebody told me, and especially internationally, I know that I think in Canada, Rogers has some plans where the data plan includes coverage for tethering.
Sure.
Am I mistaken?
I was going to ask the same question, but it sounds good. Jeff, do you know?
I don't know.
Oh.
And yeah. Yeah, really. I don't know on that one.
Podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. Send us an email.
Yeah. I seem to remember thinking that somebody told me recently that they, you know who it was? Somebody who had a Droid, a Motorola Droid, told me that on Verizon they could tether for free. Oh, but you know what it is? It's because they have an app. They have the Wi-Fi tethering app.
Now, what about the Palm Pre?
So it's not sanctioned by Verizon, but they have an open platform.
It.
They have open apps. The apps aren't blocked. And somebody wrote an app to do the Wi-Fi tethering thing. So he can run the app, turn on Wi-Fi, and tether that way.
Now, isn't Verizon also allowing Pre and Pre-Pixie users to do the tethering thing?
I think that's right, too.
Yeah. And that's, so, is that free? To,
well,
I don't know.
Keep in mind that there's, 100 Pre and Pixie users out there, so it's not going to be.
That's very generous, Jeff.
And I'm certain that my friends that are Pre users will be calling me, and I look forward to everyone's emails and comments.
Yeah, but it is a free add-on with the Pre Plus and the Pixie Plus.
Yeah, so there are some competitors doing that already. So you have to wonder is AT&T really going to be able to say, here's tethering and it's $50 a month?
Okay, now with the phones that you're getting the free tethering with, is it just like, hey, any plan, or is it specific phones? And if it's specific phones, are they phones that aren't selling well? So they're using that as something to entice people to buy those models.
Well, in
I have
the case
a feeling
of Verizon,
all the above, depending on what you're, you know, who you're talking to and what.
Yeah. For the Pre thing, of course, it's the Pre not selling well kind of deal.
Yeah. And on some of the things, I think like in Rogers, I think it's only their higher level data plans. It's not the cheapest data plans that get it.
Okay. That seems more reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have more to talk about. We have the stolen iPhone saga to catch up on. iPhone OS beta.
Do we really?
Yeah, we do. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
iPhone OS 4 beta 3 coming up. Talking about that. And thoughts on Flash from Steve Jobs. But before we get to that, we have to talk about our sponsor, which is Citrix with GoToAssist Express. And you can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/Ally. But let me tell you a little bit about what it does. If you've ever had one of those calls from a relative, you know, if grandma calls up, she has a problem with her computer, you know, how do I do this? Well, you know, click here. Okay, what do you see? No, not that. Go back. Click here. That is, one of the most frustrating things about helping grandma. And you do want to help grandma, right?
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes, you do. I guess I'm talking to Jeff now.
I was just helping.
Thank you.
I'll be quiet.
I'll continue talking to Jeff. So, Jeff, when you want to help out your grandma, the easier way, instead of going over the phone, is to use GoToAssist Express because she doesn't have to worry about any configuration. It just works, and here's how you do it. You sign up, GoToAssist.com/Ally. You can try it free for 30 days. Get the application on your computer, and then whenever grandma calls, open up the application, and without doing anything on your end, it says, here's the URL, here's the support pin, and you tell that to grandma. You say, go to this URL. And then you tell her the PIN, and then within 30 seconds to a minute, you can see grandma's screen, you can help her out, you can see what's running, you can see what's installed, you can see her hardware configuration if you're not familiar with that, you can see if there's any antivirus software running if she's on a Windows computer, and it does work on both Windows and Macintosh, and you can take control, you can click all the buttons and make it all better. There's also a chat feature, and if you're both on Windows, you can send files back and forth in case there's a file that you have, a patch, or maybe something that you just need to, update or fix on their computer. And If you're a support professional and you're doing more than one computer at one time, Citrix GoTo Assist Express allows you to do up to 8 sessions, so you can go to another computer while you're updating one and move around, and it's really cool. It's also 128-bit SSL encrypted, so it's secure. You don't have to worry about that. And one of my favorite features is that after you're done helping grandma, the support software that starts running on her computer actually goes into the trash when you're done. So you don't have to worry about extra software running on someone's computer that they're not aware of. It's just really great. I've used it, love it. Adam, I don't want to speak for you, but I think you've used it and possibly enjoyed it.
Yes. It was great. Actually, I mean, the biggest use I've seen for it sold our, my last job, the customer service team, got it. And it's been probably the number one time saving tool for that department. They absolutely like this thing completely solves our problem of these customer calls that would drone on and on as they're trying to walk people through interfaces and things like that.
Yeah, that has to be fantastic for that kind of situation. So yeah, you can try it free for 30 days by going to gotoassist.com/Ally. And we thank Citrix for their support of the We Have Communicators podcast. And with that, we're going to talk about the stolen iPhone. And the thing that there isn't a whole lot of new information, but the big deal was whether or not the police were actually legally able to go in and take Jason Chen's computers and equipment to, you know, into custody so they can check it out and, you know, as evidence. And initially Gawker's lawyer, which Jeff, you pointed out, is not even really technically a lawyer in the U.S.
Isn't a lawyer in the United States.
Yeah. They said that this shield law that protects journalists from subpoenas relating to stories does not apply in this case. Essentially, I'm looking at a CNET piece. Journalist shield law may not halt iPhone probe. And the basic gist, here are some comments from... from the Supreme Court. It would be frivolous to assert, and no one does in this case, that the First Amendment, in the interest of securing news or otherwise, confers a license on either the reporter or his news sources to violate valid criminal laws.
And that, you know what? We did not need to go all the way to the Supreme Court for something like that. I told everyone this when it frickin' happened.
Jeff said it.
Holy crap. And but, I'm still shocked that people are thinking, hey, maybe he should be protected by the shield law. He broke the law.
Yeah, it doesn't apply in cases where we're talking about people breaking the law.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
And really, if the shield law in California worked like that, I would have already packed and moved.
And started stealing things.
Oh my God.
And writing about them.
Awesome.
You have to write about it.
Yeah, then I'd write about it.
Yeah.
The other night, I stole Adam's television.
Yeah.
And then I do an expose on it. Is it the next television?
Question mark? Exclamation? Yeah. So there really isn't a whole lot of other information about that at this time, but I'm sure we'll be. Do you know if they're still holding on to the evidence to see if they can check it out?
Of course they are.
Okay.
They're not going to release the evidence until they know they have to.
Have they not looked through it yet, though?
From what I understand, they've just kind of stalled on looking at everything. Well, they go through the process of letting everyone verify that what they did was in fact okay to do. Mm-hmm. And that's totally normal. I mean, if someone said, oh, you know, there's this whole thing with the legal process, and we think that you didn't have authorization to get the warrant and seize this property. Okay, everything will stop. They'll make sure it was okay, and then they'll continue on with the investigation. Otherwise, you know, if they go through and get all this evidence and they have an awesome case, and then it turns out, no, your warrant wasn't valid, they lose all that kick-ass evidence. And no one on the prosecution side wants that to happen.
Exactly, yeah.
course, on the other hand, if it turns out that there's exculpatory evidence on there, meaning evidence that says, no, they did not commit a crime, boy, they could wrap it up a lot faster if they could just go ahead and look at everything.
Yeah. Well, I think the point is that Gizmodo purchased something that was definitely stolen. The guy knew what he had. And I believe that
so did Gizmodo. Or at least they reasonably had to know what he had.
Yeah, according to the law, if there's any suspicion that you knew that you had stolen property and it is stolen property, then you know you're committing a felony.
Yeah, how about that?
The next generation iPhone is rumored, according to Mashable, rumored to be released at WWDC, not just announced, which I'm not too sure about. But the evidence kind of points toward Apple wanting to get the thing out as soon as possible because of the leak.
Yeah.
No, that's I said evidence.
How's that for something?
I think I can vocalize. Maybe I don't want to put words in Jeff's mouth, but
and by Apple by evidence, I mean
Apple doesn't do anything for anybody. is the answer to that. So either they were ready to do it at WWDC and that's where they were going to do it, and they'll make the announcement, or they're going to do it when they had always planned to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't think Apple
that
cares.
That was a lot more articulate than what I said. Yeah. And yes, that's what I meant.
Okay, good.
You know, Apple's not, just because of this, you know, a little PR thing, it's not going to change. They're going to ship it when it's ready, and Apple's going to know when it's ready.
Yeah,
so,
I would say that makes more sense.
When other products were unintentionally leaked, Apple didn't change their time schedule. They still did things when they were going to do them. And you remember like when the Luxolamp style iMac, the magazines shipped like a day or two in advance of the actual announcement. They even worked that into the presentation and made jokes about it.
Oh yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that, and in like the there's a Power Mac leak or something like that, and I think Steve even shared a screenshot of that or something like that. But yeah, that's what I would guess. I'm not sure I even think that we'll see it during WWDC because you know they're talking about developer stuff. It's developer time.
Exactly. This is a developer event. This is not a consumer event, and there's a lot of people out there, both. Just like Apple fans and media people that forget that this is not a consumer event. As a matter of fact, most of what happens at WWDC is covered under non-disclosure agreements. So when all these developers go back home or to their office, they can't talk about it anyhow.
Right. Yeah. They'll do the special event just about the iPhone, like they always have. Right.
Right. Yeah. So they'll do the media bells and whistles thing. And then once that's done and they get all of the mainstream media out of the building, then they'll sit down and go, okay, now here's what's really going on.
Right.
And I do not expect to see the iPhone roll out at the beginning of June, maybe at the end of June.
Yeah.
But not at the beginning. They might announce the date at WWDC. But it's not really coming out then. I would be stunned.
Yeah. And the reason for announcing the date at WWDC is so developers can be ready
right.
when the phone hits the market, right?
Also so right. people can have their wallets ready.
Well, no. At WWDC, it's about the developers as
right.
as we just stated. So it's so the developers can have their stuff ready. Do you guys, I mean, when the new iPhone ships, I would expect that's the day we get iPhone OS 4 on the 3GS and the third gen iPods and
maybe,
stuff too.
Well,
right?
Maybe when the 3G
they didn't do it in
shipped,
the past, right? Yeah,
yeah. The new hardware shipped, and then it was a couple days later when the OS update was released for everyone.
That
else.
That is true. I guess I meant more on or about because it goes back to the statement I was just making about Apple wanting developers to be ready. they're going to want developers to know when it's shipping, so they the developers have some idea of what date, if they want to be ready for the 4.0 software updates, they can have their apps ready.
Yep.
Yeah, and right. That's a totally reasonable thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I mean, even if they do it at WWDC, they're going to have to scramble like heck to get them ready to a certain degree. I mean, I guess they've had longer with the 4.0 operating system, but.
Yep.
Yeah, but a lot is broken right now in the beta. So
yeah,
you know, who knows how much they've really been able to accomplish. Pretty much nothing if what they're doing involves a camera based on word that's out on the web.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. I just wanted to see what would happen if I stopped talking.
I would have started just kind of doodling again.
Well, so oh, on the way, iPhone, I'll give you the transition. On the iPhone OS front, beta 3?
Yeah, beta 3 has just been released today. Today is the 4th of, you know, what's the month?
I heard it's already been pulled, too.
That's what I heard, too. But I think it's up on the site again. I can check as I talk. But one of the more interesting things, aside from some bug fixes that I'm not really familiar with because I'm not crazy in using 4.0, they've changed the, they did not change the app switcher aside from the background, but they did add another thing in the same style as the app switcher. So, you know, when you double click your home button and it slides up the entire screen to reveal which apps have been running, it's the same sort of look. So according to Engadget, if you swipe to the far left, it shows you a screen orientation lock as well as iPod controls and a button to jump to the iPod.
That makes sense because losing
the double click.
Yeah.
I think they're making too many
gestures
changes for the too many gestures. It's just, you know, before I could, right now I can double click and I can get to my contacts, and if music is playing, I get the iPod controls and I'm just so happy. But, you know, now they're going to be adding they're going to change the entire thing. Why don't they just add a new gesture?
You know, the whole thing with the way Apple's changing up all this stuff for iPhone OS 4, and especially with that double tap on the home button, I am not excited about that at all.
Yeah, neither am I.
It feels to me, and keep in mind that I'm not a developer, so I don't have access to some of these things, but it sure feels to me like Apple is making this way, way, way too complex for the average user.
I agree.
I mean, if I want something that's really complex and difficult and I have to learn all these weird gestures and motions, and when I tap at this, in this instance, it does this thing. In this instance, it does something else. I'll go buy a freaking Windows mobile phone.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's bad when the power users are confused and have to relearn things, right?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
I will say I got an interesting response. I think I mentioned last week my concerns over the every time you quit an app, it goes into the background.
Yeah,
right.
We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah,
somebody mentioned to me, and I guess I didn't think about this when I was mentioning that they got a different perception from watching the video, that in order to, so if you have an app open, in order to jump it into the background, you double tap the home button and then it goes into that background state. And he got the impression that just tapping the home button like normal would quit you out of the application.
Yeah, that would make perfect sense, but it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way, right?
Right.
No, it does not work that way.
Every app, no matter what you do, as soon as you launch it, it hangs out in the background for an unknown amount of time.
You do the double tap and then click and hold and then close button.
Well, I heard at least from Nevin Morgan that eventually applications will just kind of go away. So like if you open the settings application and then, okay, and then you fiddle around and then leave. And it stays in the background initially, but after a while, it supposedly will just kind of poof away.
Okay, so now the question is, what is that timeout and can I control it? Or is it controlled by the app developer? Or like, do they get to set their own carbonite hibernation state time? Or do I get to set it? Or what, you know?
you know, based
like a bear,
on what
I
I've
poke
seen,
it and it wakes up and
yeah. Wow. But based on what I've seen, hypothetically, of course, once an app is running in iPhone OS 4, it continues to run and yeah. never drops off.
I'm using the simulator right now on the on beta 3. And yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, and yeah, there you go.
Oh, I didn't even... Man, Michael, you're smart.
What? I mean, I know, but why?
I never even thought about using just playing with the beta simulator to play around with some of the new functionality of the and not have to worry about putting it... Because I've been worried about putting it on any one of my devices.
Yeah, yeah.
I could play with it in the simulator.
Yep, that's how I've been playing with it.
Duh.
Unfortunately, I can't get the super cool media controls to pop up. I don't know what special gesture I need to use.
Oh, that one's where you do the double tap, slide down the side, and then tap on the top.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was doing wrong.
Also, I think you can go BBA, left, right, left, AA, BZ.
And get a free life or something?
Yes.
Power up.
Power up.
You get a better you get the iPhone prototype. That's really how Gizmodo got it.
Yeah, and then eventually you also get the added bonus of the local police department will buy you a new front door.
Ta-da!
Does that maybe only work from the sleep state, the lock screen state?
Well, from the screenshot that I'm looking at on Engadget,
it doesn't look like that.
Does
yeah,
not
no,
look like that. Yeah. But I'll try it as we talk. But the they said that the update had been pulled initially, but I just tried now and I was able to begin downloading the
maybe that's the what beta. They took out when they pulled it down and re-uploaded it.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not using it on a maybe I should take my mom's iPhone and put beta on there.
You really don't like your mom, do you?
Yeah.
Well, I've put beta software on her computer in the past and she doesn't know.
She'd know. This time she would know.
That's what I hear. That the camera didn't work and stuff like that.
Weren't you the one who talks about getting those phone calls?
Which phone calls?
The ones from friends and relatives when things aren't working.
Oh, well, if her phone's not working, then I'm good. She's not going to call me.
Because she can't call. Her phone doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, then maybe you should go ahead and put it on.
See, thinking ahead. Okay, so Steve Jobs wrote an essay about how he doesn't like Flash and how Flash sucks and why it sucks because of, you know, because it sucks, right? Is that all we have to say about that?
I just have to say Adobe and Apple are being two of the most hypocritical companies in the world right now. So,
well, you should expand on that because I just kind of said it sucks.
I'm just doing an analysis. So, I mean, I'm kind of going through that thing and looking at everybody's take on it, and you know, Apple. For well, just Apple to come out and bag on a company for, you know, proprietary. And I'm not a Flash fan. Everybody knows I hate Flash. I think it sucks. I think it's overused. I think a lot of things about it. But both Apple and Adobe have agendas underlying those statements that they're making. And Apple is not a company that is about openness, no matter. Go back yep. in their history, and I would say pretty much since the days when Woz left and the Apple II went away, the Mac is all about being closed. iTunes world is all about being closed. And the thing is I'm okay with that. I'm an Apple fan. I like it. I like the experience that's created by losing some of those freedoms. And a lot of people don't, and that's fine too. And Apple's attitude is, well, if you don't like it, then there are other devices and other platforms for you. This is our platform. And I think that's fine to present it that way. But then to kind of come out and say, well, you know, we're supporting open standards and H.264 is the thing. Well, H.264, as many people are pointing out, is not open. It's a licensed codec, right? So HTML5 is a specification, but it's not an open standard per se. It's something that everybody's contributing to and you agree on a feature set and it's a spec, but they're not going to define what video codecs to use, and Apple's still backing H.264, which I think is a great thing too. I'm not against it. I think H.264 is probably the best codec for companies to support at this point, but I haven't looked into the competitors enough to say that definitively. And it's just all these companies have an underlying agenda, and there's money behind this, and a lot of these statements come out, and the general public, who's not looking closely at these things, can tend to believe one side or the other. But neither, at the end of the day, Apple's looking out for Apple and Adobe's looking out for Adobe, and to point to users and say we're protecting users and customers is not 100% truthful, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right. And Jobs was definitely, you know, loose with his terminology by saying, you know, that these things are open, et cetera. It's an interesting read regardless. And then Adobe's CEO gave a response as well.
Yeah, I will say that Jobs did a much better job in making his case, which I think is why we see more people kind of siding with him, in addition to the fact that Flash is old and broken.
I want to see it go away for sure.
Yeah, but if you watch the interview that the CEO did for, I think it was the Wall Street Journal,
He just
kept reiterating the same marketing speech over and over again, and never really kind of addressed the questions directly. And right. the interviewer kept trying to get him to address Steve Jobs' individual points, and every response was the same kind of canned. It was really not a good defense on their part.
No, my feeling was if Adobe did something like this, and this is before he actually did the interview, my thought was that would be the biggest mistake they could make as a response to Apple. So what did they do? They made the biggest mistake they could as a response to Apple. They let the CEO, and I'm not saying that he's a stupid person, because clearly he's not. You have to be incredibly intelligent, very sharp, to run a company that size and to run it effectively, and he does. But he was not presenting the company very well, and he did exactly what I was afraid would happen, which is sit there and offer canned responses, and could have just as easily sat up there and said, "Nuh-uh, what bounces off me sticks on you," and it would have been the same thing.
So there's little things. I'll just give you two examples of this. So one from the Apple side that's just patently wrong. So in that letter, Steve Jobs bashes on Adobe for being the last developer, talking about the slow development, and specifically referring to the advances in Flash. But the example he gives is that CS5. That's finally Cocoa native for OS X. So, you know, Adobe's being really slow at developing for our platforms and bringing it up to speed with the modern technologies. Well, he's saying that at the same time, and I kind of confirmed this with a bunch of people, you know, iTunes still is using Cocoa API.
The worst application in Apple's arsenal, in my opinion. I don't know
about that. It's certainly the worst iTunes on Windows. By far, it's a horrible Windows app.
Right.
I like iTunes. You know, I'm not against iTunes, but iTunes is a complex product, and Photoshop is arguably much more, probably, if I got to look at the source code, complex
substantially
than iTunes.
Yeah. Substantially more complex.
So, you know, that you make that analogy, and it's sort of like, huh? But a lot of people don't know that, you know, probably don't know that Apple hasn't even ported over all their own stuff and it's 10 years later. So he's like, you know, it's taken them 10 years to do this. We've had OS X for 10 years. Well, you know, same thing back at you, Apple.
Yeah.
and the Finder just got converted recently, you know, so there's that. And then the Adobe guys are going, well, we have fixed Flash and we've made it better, and Flash, you know, 10.1 on mobile devices is going to be amazing and it's going to run everything. Well, guess what? 10.1 only runs on the very latest smartphones, and Flash Lite is still the thing that they're shipping, and
which doesn't run on any smartphone,
right? And I believe even 10.1 doesn't support. I may be wrong on this, so I don't want to go out and say that, but certainly anything before 10.1 doesn't support all of the functionality of Flash, and that's sort of what Apple is pointing to, saying, you know, it's not even a full real Flash that we're getting on these mobile devices, and they've had 3 years to give us a full Flash that runs on the iPhone well, and they haven't delivered it yet. And So, you know, Apple has some points there. So they're both kind of doing this thing, and you can go through each one of their statements and find not just I give you one example on each side, but there's dozens of examples on each side, or at least half a dozen on each side. So it's, you know, it's a war of words, and a lot of it is wrapped up in marketing. And at the end of the day, what you have to decide is, what is the device and experience that I want? And I think that's why I side with Apple, because Apple's saying, look, we're building an experience with our devices. It's what they did with iTunes and the iPod, and now it's what they're doing with the iPhone architecture and apps. And this is how we want it to be, and it's our company and our devices, and this is how it's going to be. And Apple has always been that way. So it's just shocking to me that suddenly a lot of people outside of even the tech industry are kind of getting into this battle. I mean, there was the stuff with... Comedy Central with
Jon Stewart.
Jon Stewart, yeah.
Talking about the
This is related to the
4G thing or the iPhone 4G thing.
It's not related to this, but yeah. What I'm saying is, Apple is getting big enough now. A lot the stuff's spilling out into the mainstream media, and they're kind of regurgitating a lot of this marketing stuff with not understanding the lower stuff, and so the general public is getting this into their getting this information and kind of, you know, it's how things happen in our society these days. And I guess I have some frustration around that, but you know, at the end of the day, it's Apple creating an experience and they're a private company and this is what they want to do. And if you don't like it, and I think Steve Jobs is very right to say this, if you don't like it, you can buy an Android and guess what? It's open and they have an open app store and it's fine. Go there. You know, and so I guess I don't understand why it gets into this minutia and why so many people get impassioned over it, because, and maybe I'm being hypocritical because I'm a little impassioned over it, but I'm impassioned over it in a way of that if Apple ever did anything that I didn't like, I recognize that I can go buy another device or I can jailbreak my iPhone and run Cydia and get apps that Apple won't let me have.
So, Adam, you're knowledgeably impassioned. And that's the difference. A lot of people are ignorantly impassioned.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I blame things like this letter from Steve and the statements by Adobe's CEO as the reason for that, because they're the ones that are getting into the mainstream media. This isn't the tech press who are looking into this. And a lot of my information comes from that realm, right? Comes from the John Grubers and the people like this who are looking into the minutia and pointing out things like, you know what? iTunes is still running Coco, so that's kind of a hypocritical statement, right? But the mainstream people hear Apple says Flash is bad, and Apple's a big company, so Flash is bad.
Well, Flash is bad, though.
But not for the reasons they, you know, just right. Saying Flash is bad, that isn't what makes it bad.
Right. I mean,
there are a lot of very valid reasons. And there's some many of them that Adobe could overcome too. Yeah. There's some awesome stuff for Flash. And even though we bag on Flash a lot, I think it's still an important and very relevant technology.
Yes.
And will be for years to come. It will take a path that ultimately I think is a little different than the path it's on right now. And that'll be okay because eventually it'll find that place where it really is the perfectly right technology for the job.
Well, every technology has cycles, right? And that's a technology that's on, has been in that cash cow, you know, everybody used it position, and it's now transitioning into that downside on the other side of the peak and plateau. And every technology does that. Adobe's seems to be having a hard time with that. And I think some of the statements Steve Jobs made about, you know, hey, you might want to look at future technologies like HTML5 and start building your tools around supporting that. And I think Adobe probably is. They're a smart company.
They have HTML5 support in Dreamweaver, of course. And I believe that Flash CS5 will do HTML5 export also.
Right.
So, so it's not like they're turning a blind eye to what's coming. They're just really trying to continue promoting what they already have and solidify it as the de facto standard.
Yeah, and I think that's not a smart position. I think we see websites already transitioning away from Flash video. I think it's going to be happening more and more for this, for the reasons that I'm not a fan of Flash. It served its purpose in today's day and age with other technologies available that work better and more efficiently at delivering video over the web. Flash just hasn't been able to keep up. And it's because it's complex. It has layers and layers, you know, layers on top of layers. And the newer technologies are getting rid of some of those middle tiers that Flash relies on, right? So use my point is, use Flash for what it's good for and what it's relevant to be used for, but don't just overuse it because it's easy and we already know how to do that. And this new thing is, we have to learn something new. And it's going to be a little bit more difficult at first, but in the long run, it's going to be a much better technology on the web. I think that's what Apple's responding to. And again, they've always done that too. They pushed USB forward before a lot of people got rid of the floppy disk. You know, they're doing it here. They're saying, we're pushing this standard H.264 as the new way to do video on the web. And that is fine because I think it's a great technology. And I think a lot of people recognize that. I mean, Google's with them and Microsoft's with them. But also people need to realize that's not an open codec. It's licensed and they all have money in that.
I did not know that. That's about the H.264.
Well, there you go. You just learned something new.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, it's MPEG LA. You can do some search on it. I mean, it's a standard and it's open and people can use it, but it's just like JPEG or GIF or any of these other standards that there's licensing. People own patent rights to those technologies. And so those things could work out. And very often it's Apple or the server company or whoever paying the licensing fee, so we don't get hit by it. But yeah, there's some pretty nasty stuff wrapped up in H.264. I was just reading recently, and I need to delve more into this too, that your HD, I always forget, the new HD camcorders that record write to flash cards in H.264. If you go into the licensing agreement, and this includes point and shoot cameras, if you go and really delve and look into the licensing agreement when you buy those cameras and use them, you're not allowed to use the video that was encoded in that as professional video sale without paying additional licensing fees to MPEG LA, at least according to the agreements. Now, none of that's being enforced.
Yeah, it'd be pretty crazy.
But the language is in there, which is a little bit scary when you start to think about it.
Yeah.
So you go out and shoot your video on your point and shoot, and you put it on your website, and or even on you. And there would be a question, if you put it on YouTube and YouTube throws an ad on top of it, does YouTube have to pay H.264 licensing fees again for that content, or do you?
That's probably
why it's going to end up in court at some point.
And well, they're not only if they were to go back and enforce it. I don't know that they're enforcing it. So, you know, some people are getting a little concerned because the language isn't in there. And this happens a lot too with licensing agreements and terms of service and stuff like that. There's stuff that gets in there that I guess the scary thing is that it could be enforced. If it's never enforced, though, is there really any damage?
No. Well, probably not. But what I'm envisioning is someone's going to use one of these cameras. They're going to make an indie film,
right,
and it's going to get picked up, or it's going to be shown at some festivals, and all of a sudden MPEG LA is going to come knocking on their door and saying, you realize that you now owe us $10,000 in back licensing fees.
Our commercial codec. Right. And as this article that I was reading pointed out, that language is on cameras that are sold as professional cameras. So it's kind of a little bit of, $10,000 camera is being sold to professionals. They're only going to use it for professional work. So to have language in there that says, well, if you write out to the SD card, anything you write to that card, which is encoded with this codec, you can't use for commercial purposes without paying additional licensing. Well, that's just weird.
Yep.
It just doesn't make sense.
All right. We need to move to the outro. to the iPhone picks. We have iPhone picks. That's part of the. That's not in the outro.
I have one.
Well, you can look for one while I mention the fact that.
Oh, I remember what I was going to pick. I was going to pick a hardware, and I was researching it. Okay. I just needed to get the name of it. So,
there's a notification on Cydia that I just saw. It says, if you reboot your iPad and it comes up looking like a giant iPod Touch, restart Springboard. As I said, these issues will be corrected in the relevant extensions sometime later today. So today is the 4th, and so by the time you listen to this, there's probably going to be some updates in Cydia. There are going to be some updates if you believe the time frame that is listed there. So with that, it's time for iPhone picks, and Jeff, I'll let you go first.
All right, I'm going to be a consumer whore today, and I'm picking the Amazon.com app for the iPad.
All right.
Yeah, it actually, I find it to be a more pleasant way to shop for products at Amazon than in a web browser on my Mac. The interface is set up very nicely for the iPad, for the whole touch thing, and the, you know, just having the whole thing with the recommendations that it tosses up at you and best deals and gives you, it's like stacks of cards, and so then you can just pick the stack that you want, and then it opens up into nice little grids for you, so it's easy to see interesting things that you might want to buy, but then searching for products is really nice too, and it's very easy to use. I really like the app. Oh, and it's free, of course.
Cool. Can you get the Kindle books using this application, or do you still have to go to the web to get your Kindle books for the Kindle app?
I believe you still have to go to the web. I haven't tried.
Well, that's free.
Let me look at bestseller books real quick. Something that's likely to be available on the Kindle. Let's see. Nope, it looks like I might have just bought a book. No. No, it looks like you don't have access to Kindle.
Boo. Okay, but it's good for everything else on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Amazon mobile app, and it's free. All right, Adam, it's your turn.
Dag blang it. I want to pick a Belkin product, and it's a car accessory. It is the Belkin Dual Auto Charger, and I'm trying to find it on their website. I think it's $29.99. I'm pretty sure that's the price. But what I can't figure out is if they actually make it anymore. I actually bought it in the Apple store because I needed to replace the charger for my iPhone, my in-car charger for my iPhone.
I found it, the dual auto charger for iPhone and iPod.
Yeah, did you find it on Belkin's site, though?
Yeah.
But they don't have a lot of details on it, I guess. I was looking for the specs because the reason I'm picking it is because when I bought it, it has, so it looks like it goes into your cigarette lighter and little dongle sticks out and has a light on the back to tell you when it's charging. And then it has two USB ports. So one reason I picked it up was because I could then charge two devices at the same time. So I have a USB headset that I sometimes need to charge. I can plug that in one side and I can have my iPhone or my iPod plugged in on the other side. The other nice thing about it when I bought it was it had a port. So one port delivers one amount of power, and I was trying to find the power specs.
One amp USB.
Well, it's one amp, so I don't know how many watts that translates into. And the reason that becomes important is because one is a what they call a high power port, which will charge your phone twice as fast. So right. You plug in there and you charge your phone twice as fast. Well, when I got the iPad and I found out, well, the iPad has higher charging requirements, I was like, I wonder if that high power port or that other fast charging, I think they call it a fast charging port, will charge my iPad. And lo and behold, it does. So that's why I'm picking it, is because that one will also charge your iPad if you plug it into the fast charging or the higher power side, which is really nice. So I now don't have to buy another charger separate from my iPhone to carry around in my car just to charge my iPad in an emergency. So, and it's black, and it came with all the cables that I needed. It came with both an iPhone USB to docking cable and the just USB to like mini USB cable, I think. And I think that's not listed on the Belkin site either. Like there's no details there. But anyway, it's a nice product. You can probably find it at your Apple store. It's from Belkin. It's called the Belkin Dual Auto Charger for iPhone and iPod. But it'll work with your iPad too.
And it's $30, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at it on Amazon right now in the Amazon app on my iPad. $19.86.
So even get it on Amazon.
See, that's why I'm thinking
4.5 stars.
Yeah, I couldn't find it on the main Belkin site in kind of the iPod charging error area. And it looks like they might have newer products. And Belkin is famous for kind of having a product and then kind of redesigning it and changing it and renaming it. And even though it's kind of the same thing, it's newer. So this might be something that's, I just wanted to make sure people could find it. So it was at the Apple Store. I don't know if it's a current product or if they've redone it, but.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael.
I'm on the Amazon app on my iPad right now, and I'm looking at the recommended books for me. And one of the recommended books is Podcasting for Dummies.
Great book written by T. Morris, by the way.
It actually is a good book. I just find it very funny that it showed up as a recommended book.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. So my pick, like I said before, I got an iPad again. And part of the reason was to try out this case that Marware sent me. And I'm a fan of Marware's cases, and they do some good stuff for the iPhone. And this case that they sent me is the EchoView ECO-VUE for iPad. It's $45. And this case does a lot of the same things as the Apple case, although I have not played with the Apple case. But this is a leather case. Oh.
I'm glad you're doing this because this is one that I was very interested in.
Yeah, so it's a leather case. They say that they're doing some tanning procedures that aren't harmful, but who cares?
That's the echo part, Michael. It's well, good no, for the okay, environment.
So it is important.
After they kill the animal.
Yeah, see, that's the thing I didn't get. I was like, echo, okay. Wait, but you're still killing a cow? So,
Michael, do you know how you actually tan a hide?
No, I'm vegan. I don't want to hear that.
Actually, you really don't.
Bad chemicals, though. So I guess this is more environmentally friendly.
Okay, so the EchoView, it's leather. Nice stitching. Very, it closes up. It's a little folder style thing. So you slip the iPad in there, and the way it's secured it on the top is there's a little flap of fabric that's probably goes down about a quarter of the length, maybe a third of the length of the iPad. And what you do is you just kind of tuck it behind the iPad, and that's what secures it in there. And it does a good job. There's no Velcro or anything. So it's actually, it keeps it in there, and it's easy to yank the iPad out when you need to. So that's nice. You can also, so it's just the case. You can use it as just a case, but you can also take the front flap and wrap it around the back, bend it around the back, and there's a little elastic strap that will hold that flap in place, so it'll stay open, and you can use it as the iPad in its case, as just an iPad shaped case. So there's no extra stuff hanging off. There's also on the back a little elastic strap that you can put your hand through, and it gives you a little more support to hold on to it in landscape and in portrait orientation. There's also another flap that pops out. It's magnetically held, but you open that up, and it actually lets you get a nice angle on your iPad so you can type on it. And man, that has just changed my world for the iPad. This case is just, it makes it so much nicer because I can, chuck it on a counter if I want. It's much more comfortable for typing. The angle that little flap provides allows me to just see it much better when it's down on the counter or what have you. It also has this other orientation where if you don't use the little strap that holds it open, you can do a landscape angled thing where you prop it up using the other side. But it kind of tends to fall down a little bit unless you get it just right. So I don't use that so much. But aside from that, it's really sweet.
Okay, so you hit a couple of my things, but I have a couple questions.
Okay.
So I thought the same thing about the landscape stand where you just kind of set it up like an A-frame. I didn't see any supporting straps or anything to kind of hold that A-frame shape. So I had assumed it would just kind of fall down.
Yep.
So, okay, not good in that. And I have to say for Apple's case, I don't really trust it in that mode either. Apple kind of has this little A-frame mode you can put it in where it uses the back flap, you know, to kind of be the base of it, but it's really sturdy or stable. And the angle's not really that good unless you're in a specific, you know, kind of dead-on viewing for doing landscape like video. I'm assuming it's for kind of like video watching, but it doesn't work very well. So, and, you know, I am actually liking the Apple case more than I thought I would. It's the same folio style, but in comparison, one of the things I don't like about it is in the, and this is the question I'm going to have for you on this one, in the sort of keyboard mode where you've got it, you know, at the angle with that little stand behind it.
Yeah.
How sturdy is it? Apple's works pretty well, but it does kind of have some bounce to it.
No bounce. You know, it's
so
nice.
It's nice and solid.
Yeah, it's nice and solid. It's really good. I enjoy using it like that.
Yeah. And about the thickness, because one of the things that is really nice about the Apple case is just it's almost like not having a case, but that's a good and a bad for me. The good is it's nice and thin. The bad is I worry about drop protection.
I think that with this case, as long as it falls on one of the sides, and I mean the front of the back, I should say, if it doesn't fall on the side, then, you know, I'd say it's really nice. It has some good padding in there. Feels really nice when you're just carrying it around as a portfolio.
Does it feel too thick though?
No, it's nice. Feels really nice.
Because the other one that's been popular is the in-case convertible book jacket.
I have not
heard some people complain
that it's thick.
It's kind of thick, yeah.
I need to check that out. I need to talk to the in-case guys about getting one of those. But my pick for this week is the Marware Echo View for iPad. And you can get a link to that as well as all of our iPhone picks by checking out the show notes at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. Again, I have not created a new website for the podcast, but I'll be getting on that soon, and there will be a new URL soon. But for now, it's iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And you can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And once again, our sponsor is Citrix with GoToAssist. GoToAssist Express. It's GoToAssist.com/Alley for GoToAssist Express. And anything else? Any closing comments?
No. Oh, I forgot to mention. I'll mention one thing as a bonus. When we were doing the cool iPad and cool things like the cabinet mount.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the iPad mounted in a Mac Plus?
No.
Somebody took an old Mac Plus case and cut a slot in the side so you could slide the iPad in. And it's almost, I think the original Mac screen was what, 9-point-something inches? It's almost perfect, but the Mac Plus
that
screen
looks
is more
awesome.
Square. Yeah, more square than rectangular. So it's not quite 4x3, but still, kind of a cool little hack.
Yeah, that looks cool. All right. you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, as well as twitter.com/jgamet. And you can find Adam Christensen at the MacCast, maccast.com, and twitter.com/maccast. Thanks for being here, guys.
Sure thing. As always, it's a blast and an adventure.
Yeah. Yep. And you can find my Twitter on the Twitter if you find me and care to find me. Something like that. Twitter.com/Michael Johnston. But don't follow me unless you want to. It's subliminal messaging. I'm tricking everybody into following me.
Really? Okay. Hey, Michael, don't make me cookies.
You know, I feel like hey, Adam, you want to help me make some cookies for Jeff? Because I have this feeling.
Score.
All right. And with that, another We Have Communicators is done, or Picard out.
You really need to work on that outro.
I know. But I just said it to make Adam happy.
Yeah. I don't know what to say.
All right. It's done.
LaForge, meet me in the engine room. No, that's not right.
I carry around a mouse, right? So what are we gonna do?
I was telling him I think they had a bunch of accessories that they had gotten in for 3G launch day. And So they were like stockpiled in the back because I went in there on Thursday to see if they had any of the camera connection kits. And I asked the girl, I'm like, she's like, can I help you? I'm like, do you have the iPad camera connection kit? And I wish I could remember exactly what she said because she said it in a very creative way. But the undertone was, yes, we have them and I cannot sell one to you.
Interesting.
She was like, you can go online and order them. And then Jeff was just saying he went into his store and they had a bunch of accessories right before. So I think Apple got stockpiles of accessories for the people that were buying. Basically, she was telling him they're basically reserved for the people that are going to be in here buying 3G iPads on Friday so we can upsell them on all this crap.
Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers.